This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Taking you on a trip, ain't no seats. All we got, stairs and feet. He's a foreign behind.
Hey, Frank, this Thursday we're going to be at the Schnucks on Arsenal, and guess what they're having? Pineapple Palooza. It's the world's largest pineapple display at the Schnucks on Arsenal this Friday. 590 The Fan's going to be broadcasting from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. And Dave Peacock's going to come by, the CEO at Schnucks, but also avid sports fan. And I got the sense that Dave really enjoyed the Blues celebration, the Blues parade. Man. And
it was Kroenke. There's a little bit of Kroenke in that whole celebration for him, I believe.
And I feel like he's held it in. We've gotten him a few times to talk about it. But having gone down that road with the NFL, I think Dave sort of let it out a little bit. About this being a bad sports town.
Yeah.
With the aerials,
he's
the visuals.
Tweeted out some incredible photos.
Yes. I think he enjoyed it quite a bit. So we'll have Dave on site with us coming up 11-ish out. We told him really 10:59. Is the slop in this week? Because Strick is, you know, on that Hawaii, or Hoff is in Hawaii. Strick is on a hockey vacation with the missus, you know, NHL draft
just
coverage.
Just what every mother of three in Ladue wants, the NHL draft.
Now, the upside is it was in Vancouver.
Which is a beautiful town. All right. Is Bill ready? All right. Let's welcome Mr. Soccer, Bill McDermott. Bill, great to be with you. How are you, sir?
Frank, Martin, how are you doing?
We're doing well. I told Frank I would break down the big quarterfinal match with the American women against France, and he said, please don't. So I said, maybe we should leave that to Bill. But let's go back. We were actually on the air yesterday as the penalty was called in the box, and the U.S. gets the penalty kick. Rapinoe gets the game winner. What did you think of that call?
Call was marginal, Martin. There were two or three other calls earlier in the game, especially the first part of the second half, where there were penalty kicks warranted that were much more blatant, and the referee was right in the direct area where she could have seen that. But that was a light call. But Rose Lavelle, because of her abilities, not just on the ball, but to be able to do the international thing, and as embellished, and I think the referee bought that somewhat. So consequently, Spain, who did give the United States a difficult game. Here's what's going to happen, Frank and Mark, in the course of a World Cup. You're playing seven games in 27 days. At this stage of the competition, everybody does not play like the 1970 Brazilians, where it's a thing of beauty. Those days are over. You take the grit and substitute that for the beauty of the game, get out of that particular venue, and get ready to play France in the quarterfinals, pure and simple. Get the win, get out of there, get ready for your next game.
I read something where Spain was real rugged the whole game, or their style was to kind of beat up the Americans, and then maybe that caught up to them in the end.
Martin, I cannot agree with you more. Alex Morgan, in particular, was fouled every time she got anywhere near the ball. Now, she plays with her back to goal on a regular basis, but she was fouled persistently from the opening center off to late in the game, and therein lies one of the problems for Spain. When they absolutely had to have the ball late in the game after Rapinoe has scored her second penalty kick, instead of trying to get the ball, keep it, get it forward, get it into the United States penalty area, they continued to foul, which means the United States got the ball back automatically. They fouled way too much, and they paid the process.
Not that you have the analytics right in front of you, but what percentage at that level of penalty kicks actually are successful? And wasn't it identical penalty kicks from her point of view?
Exactly the same. She struck it the same. You normally don't like to see a right-footed player shoot the ball across their body like that, but she's very comfortable in doing just that. But in answer to the first part of your question, Frank, the majority of the penalty kicks that are taken are successful simply because it is a tremendous advantage for a shooter. The shooter has every advantage in the world over a goalkeeper on a penalty kick scenario.
And the goalie guessed properly, but it still didn't matter. And do they all do that immediately? They just decide that they're going left or right and they have no choice once they commit?
Almost every goalkeeper in the world at any level, at every level, I should say, Martin, makes a guess on a penalty kick, yes.
How has the Ladue grad, Becky Sauerbrunn, done in general throughout this World Cup?
In general, she's rock solid on defense. A lot of people will question the decision-making process of the goal yesterday. Pure and simple, the goalkeeper, Alyssa Nair, plays that ball to Becky Sauerbrunn. She had no business playing that ball with Sauerbrunn at the tip of her own penalty area arc. Do you think Brianna Scurry would have ever played the ball to Carla Overbeck at the 1999 World Cup? I think we all know the answer to that. Seth Meyer wouldn't have given that ball to Franz Beckenbauer. You do not play a ball on the ground to the goalkeeper at the tip of your own penalty area arc when you're trying to get out of your own backfield.
Now, going into this, we know the reigning champs, heavy favorites, the U.S., but I feel like people like yourself, mentioned France as a possible, and they've never won it, but as a possible wild card here. How do you rate the matchup on Friday?
I rate the United States still as the best team in the World Cup, and I run the risk of being tremendously jingoistic doing that, Martin, but just look at the style of play and the way they've been playing. They did lose. The United States did lose to France earlier this year in preparation for this World Cup. They lost by a score of 3-1. However, at that particular time, Rapinoe, Ertz, Lavelle, vital players did not play for the United States. That's not to say that France is not a good team. They're very accomplished. And what they're trying to do is make history, and that is have the men and women in the same country hold the World Cup at the same time.
Was the United States team the favorite to win when this World Cup tournament broke out?
Yes, by a goodly margin, Frank. They're ranked number one in the world. They're the defending champs. And yes, they were largely figured to repeat as World Cup champions, which repeating as a World Cup champ, despite the fact that Germany did it 2003 and 2007, is next to impossible at this top international level.
What did you think of the early criticism, the celebration when it was the 13-zip game, and then I think they sort of mocked themselves with their little quiet claps after that? Do you think they got a little excited, or how did you rate that?
I think some of it was justified, Martin, the criticism. When you score a goal in the 92nd minute, and it's the 13th goal against a team that was dramatically outclassed from the very beginning of the game, you do not celebrate that, irrespective of what you say you're doing. The coach, Joe Ellis, said, I was just celebrating the fact that Carly Lloyd had scored in a World Cup game. It's 12-0 at the 90-minute mark. The referee didn't have a feel for the temperature of the game. She adds 3 minutes to the game. An absolutely inexcusable error to have a 13th goal scored in the 92nd minute. And no, you cannot celebrate a 13th goal in a World Cup game.
All right, let's move to the MLS. We're going to be hearing during their All-Star festivities in late July, early August, that it is official?
I think that is the plan, Frank. Again, I don't know officially by any means, but the league in past years has always made announcements of significance in conjunction with the All-Star game. The league did not want to take anything away from the World Cup final, which is July 7th. So I think sometime between July 7th and July 31st, the decision will come down about teams 28 and 29, namely St. Louis and Sacramento. Who is going to be team number 30? That is for total conjecture. No one has any idea yet for that.
Is anybody that follows it closely worried about too much expansion? I mean, it's exciting for St. Louis. It's great for Austin and Sacramento, and Cincinnati's got their team, and Nashville's getting one. Has anybody, the pundits said, well, this is too fast?
Well, I think, Martin, you should be wary of the fact that you're getting to have a lot of teams. Are you going to sacrifice the quality? I don't think so, because there are players literally all over the world playing in this league now. It's become a destination league, but I think 30 teams, that would be plenty for Major League Soccer. Yeah, in answer to your question, that's plenty.
You think the Blues run and the display of sports passion by our town, not that it's wavering anyway, but Commissioner Garber has got to see this, and Jim Cavanaugh was actually on one of the floats at the parade. What do you think?
Well, and Jim is one of the owners of the St. Louis Blues, but I think the overall structure of professional sports in our city, with St. Louis FC largely contributing to that on this deep Open Cup run, I think the city is more than capable of handling and will be exceedingly excited about Major League Soccer coming to St. Louis, because St. Louis, as we've talked about many times, St. Louis was the first soccer capital of the United States. Where that is now, we don't know, Frank and Martin. However, any degree of a newfound cachet or respectability that the sport enjoys today in our country is directly attributable to what St. Louis started way back in 1875. St. Louis, if there's going to be a professional soccer league in the United States, St. Louis deserves to play a part.
And the last we had heard, it was a little bit of tightening up with corporate sponsorship, mm-hmm. naming rights, those sorts of things. Do we feel like that's fallen into place?
positively, because, again, I'm not speaking because I have 100% validity on my answer, but I think what has been transpiring within the last 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks are all those type of things being taken care of, Martin. Yeah, that's exactly what has transpired, and that is exactly what the league is looking for, sure.
Most importantly, did you kiss the cup? Did you drink from the cup? You are you're part of the O.B. Clark's mafia long before the Blues players roll in there. You come with the real estate there. What was your experience?
My experience at O.B. Clark's was quite simple, Martin. On Thursday, I went up there just to say hello to Alexander Steen, because we developed the relationship. Chris Kerber used to have me on postgame show on Saturday nights at O.B. Clark, and he had me on a couple times with Steen, because all Steen wanted to talk about was international soccer. So I'm up there on that particular Thursday. I see the Blues players, and I show a picture to Vladimir Tarasenko of my grandson, who was born on Friday, June 7th. Now, Tarasenko decided to stop and talk to me, because evidently figured, well, he's friends with Steen, he's okay. So I show him the picture of my grandson born on Friday, June 7th. He said, you know what? So was my grandson. Excuse me. So was my son. My son was born on June 7th. I said, I know. That's why I showed you the picture. We were next door neighbors at Missouri Baptist. Your son and my grandson were born on the same day.
Wow. That is absolutely incredible.
So you were in the middle of that Thursday mayhem?
Oh.
How many hours were you there?
And the morning. Well, I think the players had left Enterprise early in the morning. You come up to OP's at about, I don't know, 8:30, 9:00, 10:30, somewhere in that ballpark. They were up there celebrating. The doors did not open till 1 o'clock. I was there between 5:30 and 6, and it was still going strong. And the players, how do I put this politely? They were sufficiently working on their personalities.
A nice way of putting it. Hey, this if and when the MLS comes, what happens with the USL squad? Can both of them work?
Yeah, both will work, Frank, and both will stay as is. And this is the way the soccer pyramid for various clubs work throughout the United States. Quite a few teams at the USL championship level are affiliates of Major League Soccer teams. So the soccer pyramid will continue from the academy to USL to MLS.
And would it be like a feeder program in a sense?
Precisely.
Like your AAA team is basically in your own backyard.
That'll have something to do with it, Martin. Now, that's not to say it's a given that if you play in the USL Championship, you're immediately going to make that jump to MLS, but it is certainly a starting point, and it's a starting point to get your young players, your academy players, who have grown up in and around the St. Louis area on a regular basis, get them into the possible fray of maybe representing their city for an MLS team.
Tell you what, St. Louis FC looks like they can hang with the MLS.
They look awfully strong, and as I mentioned just a moment ago, they're making a deep Lamar Hunt United States Open Cup run. But believe me, Martin, Frank, it is not that easy. It is not that easy to beat these MLS teams. But St. Louis is doing it convincingly, and they're doing it in style. Sam Fink getting a head ball goal on a corner kick in the absolute death of the game against F Cincinnati. So now they play. They'll get all they want now. On Wednesday, July 10th, they play Atlanta FC, which is the defending MLS Cup champion. So it gets a little more difficult now.
Bill, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much. We will talk soon.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks, Martin. Talk to you soon.
All right, Mr. Soccer, Bill McDermott.
I think he's part of the original, like, O.B. Clark's mafia. A lot of people are now globbing on. I think you could probably find him there most days.
With Mr. Gessling, the late Jim Gessling, the late Mr. Shanahan, those guys had standing tables there at all times.
And attorney to the stars, Furman Percelli, part of the O.B. Clark's mafia.
All right, we're going to take a short time out. Before we go to break, quick word about Hollywood Casino. Was there over the weekend for the Train concert and for the Goo Goo Dolls. And then we did a little people watching. Bob McCormick said that we should go gamble. So Monique put $20 in the slot, and Bob lost his shirt. But we made $17.50. So it was a $2.50 loss for us. We felt good about it. But we just like kind of hanging out there, because there's no better people watching place in St. Louis. Charlie Gito's had a great chicken parm there. Unbelievable chocolate cake. I love going to 99 Hops House, and the all-you-can-eat buffet is one of my favorites. Hollywood Casino, our title sponsor. We'll be right back.